today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, a fare checking app is fined $35 million for deceiving users. Doing away with Yosemite's reservation system has created a hellacious parking situation in Yosemite Valley, and a United pilot is attacked by bats in his hotel room. Those stories and more next in the news.
Want to avoid the coldest seats on the plane next time you fly? Well, in our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22, we'll talk about the worst place on the plane if you're trying to stay warm.
Road reporter Clayton Whitehead spent 10 days in the Baltic states of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. At 11:35, Clayton joins us for an insightful look at a land few of us have visited and his thoughts on how a group of people who have only had their freedom for 35 years look at Americans.
Odds and Ends at 11:55 includes two Dolly Parton travel updates, and we'll reveal the World Cup visitors, what the World Cup visitors are talking about, besides ranch dressing, of course.
Here to help you find a parking place in Yosemite Valley and not freeze to death on your next flight, sharing the really important travel tips, we are the Travel Guys.
On the road again,
I've been everywhere, man.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to another live and in living radio. Well, wait a minute. We were not totally live. We're partially live, but...
Partially live.
Yeah. It's Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, every Saturday from 11 to 12. Find us at TravelGuysRadio.com, including podcasts whenever you like. Thanks for coming along. Mark, good to see you again. I have to start off by asking, because you told me just recently you were going to go see... Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, last night.
Yeah, how
last night. Very good, very good. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. You know, the Music Circus building is a little different than it was back in the day. Like it also has air conditioning and modern wonderful things like that. But you know, that has been a part of our community here for a long time. And for folks who are new around here, the Music Circus for many, many, many years was considered to be one of the, probably still is, one of the best, what they call summer stock, one of the best places to go and, you know, get your wings wet or to move up in the world of onstage entertainment, whether you were front of the house or back in the or the house. Theaters all over the country recognized people who had the Music Circus in Sacramento on their resume. That was something that showed that, you know, you'd been maybe not in the major leagues, but certainly up to AAA for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. It was it's such a cool place even back in the day. Of course, now in the round and the AC and all, but, you know, people, I lived for a brief time when I worked at KCRA Radio 50 years ago.
Wow.
You know, 76 and all of that. And I lived right down the street from the Music Circus. And it was always fun to watch people, you know, heading to the circus. I had friends that you would take tickets and work there part-time. But, you know, that particular hub, that particular area was just alive. You know, it had a energy that was all its own as a result of the tent.
Still does. Still does. I will contend that the exactly what you're talking about, the pre-show, the gathering of people as they're coming into the theater, and now they have this beautiful outside area that you can wait in if it's not too ungodly hot in Sacramento. But I agree with you. There is a certain amount of theater atmosphere, if you will, that helps you get ready for the fact that you've chosen to go to the theater for the evening. And, you know, even we don't dress up quite as much as we used to for the Music Circus, thank goodness, because as most people know, it's usually between 1,000 and 2,000 degrees in Sacramento in the summertime in the evenings. And so folks dress a little more casually than they used to, but the theater is still just as good. And it's it really is a Sacramento tradition. If you have never been, then it's something that you should look at the schedule and pick out a show, because it really is. It's a great theater, as Tom mentioned, in the round. and really one of our community assets here in Sacramento.
Well, we are the travel and entertainment guys and the top of every Travel Guys radio show. We do our best to bring you up to date on what's been going on in the travel news. And with today's edition of the Travel News, once again, Travel News reporter, here's Mark Hoffman.
Delta Airlines led off this round of Wall Street reports on Friday morning by beating what the estimates were for their earnings and their revenues, and also not necessarily good news for travelers. The Delta CEO was basically gloating to investors that high fares are sustainable, even as oil gets cheaper. Let me translate that for you, folks. Fares are not coming down anytime soon. As we've talked about here on this program in the last couple of weeks, the airlines have discovered that they can charge 30% more for their tickets, and you still line up to buy them. So if any other business found out they could get 30% more for their product, I can tell you what would happen. If I could charge 30% more for my product, which I pretty much have to, but that's because of the hotels and the airlines and the like, and people still bought it, why then you would charge those prices. In my case, I'm sort of passing on increases, but with the airlines, as the fuel prices come down, down almost a dollar from their peak, $1 a gallon, so they're making money hand over fist. And what the Delta CEO is basically telling you is that higher fares are sustainable. That means people are willing to pay the freight, and we can charge more. We might even make money off of people flying on our airplanes.
You know, it's sad because flying and vacations and going to see friends and family is essential. I mean, it's something that as part of our condition is something we need. You know, it's not necessarily, you would think that, oh, well, that's a luxury, but it's really not. It's something that the human condition needs. And it gets to the point, regardless of the price, people will give up something else. You'll find something else to do. You'll drive the car that may be ready to be replaced another 5 years simply so that you don't have to have that car payment and you can make those airline flight payments. I was just going to say real quickly, that'll be next. Pretty soon you can finance your vacation.
Yeah.
3.9%.
Yes. And the other deal is that if you're you talk about giving something up in order to be able to fly. And of course, some people have to fly for a living. It's like some people drive their cars around a lot for a living. So sometimes you have expenses that you can't push aside. But nonetheless, in our small effort here to get the airlines to pay attention and lower the fares since the cost of fuel was coming down does not look like it's going to bear fruit anytime soon. So the United guy had already said that the United CEO, that he was kind of in this same boat, that he felt like that if higher fares were not necessarily putting a damper on demand. And as he clapped his hands and smiled off camera. So anyways, airfares are going to be are going to stay where they are for a while. The good news is that if the fuel prices come down at some point, the airlines will have the ability to be able to offer lower fares, perhaps in the off season or something like that. So there may be some relief from this as time goes on. And we with this whole dynamic pricing thing, if the airlines have a little more wiggle room, we may get to see that wiggle room in the off season. I mentioned this in the headlines, travel app, it's called Hopper. I actually put this on my phone about 6 weeks ago. And after about 3 or 4 days, I said, this is BS and there's nothing to this. But they have over 4 million people have downloaded their app onto their phone. The Federal Trade Commission charged them, says they will have to pay $35 million to settle allegations it charged fees without consent and deceived users about fees and benefits of some products. They told people, they automatically signed people up for their VIP service. You weren't paying attention and you bought something from them. When you got to the end, then there was this little checkoff box that was already pre-checked. and they charged you for the VIP service, which was supposed to get you all kinds of benefits like, you know, line cut for if you had to call in for something like that. Didn't happen. Wasn't true. It also said that doing this at the end like this and automatically opting people in is not legal. And people who use this app, some of them figured it out and sued, filed a complaint with the FTC. And the FTC has come back and said, yeah, you're absolutely right. So if you have the fare checker hopper, H-O-P-P-E-R, on your phone or anywhere else that you rely on, just know that these are not honest people.
No, my.
So if you choose to do business with them, that's your deal, but they are not honest people. And the Federal Trade Commission, they're not bringing the hammer down on very many people during this administration, and they brought it down on these guys. So what does that tell you?
Yeah. By the way, Hopper, that's a name of a new kids movie. Not really a kids movie, but, you know, maybe people thought that it had something to do with the film. It's a which I won't go into details about, but just curious that the app, it's called Hopper, just happened to show up about the same time.
Somebody recommended it to me as a place that, you know, where airfare drops and stuff would be recognized.
Yeah.
But Kayak is still my go-to. I've had it on my phone for a day and a half, Hopper. And then after about the fourth promotional feed into my texts, I decided that, you know, these people really needed to go. Them and CVS drugstores.
Oh, my gosh.
Be careful about what you sign up for at CVS because they want to contact you like every 7-8 minutes.
This is true.
And tell you about something that's going on. All right. Back to the news here. Yosemite's no reservation system. Park disaster or smashing success? Park disaster. Yosemite had a reservation system for a number of years, and so you made a reservation before you went to the park, and when they ran out of parking places or they hit the designated number of visitors for the day, then there were no more reservations. The reservation system was done away with this year, along with some other things at national parks. President Trump had something to do with that. And employees of Yosemite and organizations supporting it say that the hordes of visitors are demoralizing staff and damaging the park. On a regular basis, since the 1st of June, parking spaces are not available in Yosemite Valley after 8:30 in the morning.
Whoa.
I remember us telling people, you know, it's going to be crowded in Yosemite this year without this reservation system. Get your butt out of bed. Drive the 4 hours to Yosemite and get there at 9 o'clock in the morning so you can get in, especially on a weekend. I can't make that same recommendation now because if parking spaces are gone by 8 or 8:30, good Lord, that means you have to get up here and leave in the middle of the night or get a hotel room partly there. But if you're going to Yosemite, know that if you're not inside Yosemite Valley by 8 or 8:30 in the morning, parking may be a huge challenge.
You mentioned, and we talked about this a few weeks back, that Yosemite is open 24/7, meaning that you could arrive in the middle of the night or the middle of the morning and still get into the park and get one of those parking spots, but you'd have to leave it for 3 a.m.
Well, there's nothing in this article, nor do I know of any system at Yosemite that allows them to say at the gate, you know, hey, sorry, folks, we're out of parking spaces. Go away and come back, or sit here and wait until somebody leaves, and then we'll let another car in. So Yosemite has always been an incredibly popular park, and so it's none of this surprises me, but the reservation system was really a good idea. It was really a good idea. It helped alleviate this problem. Now it's gone. The shuttle buses run people around Yosemite Valley. Reports are that the shuttle buses are packed to capacity. Are having to leave people behind at stops and stuff like that. They run every 10 or 15 minutes, so that's not the end of the world. But Yosemite is a very beautiful and very delicate place. Might I suggest that in order to keep it that way, some sort of human control is really kind of necessary. So if you're going to Yosemite, beware, because parking up there, especially on Saturdays and Sundays, is really, really difficult. Here's an idea from United Airlines. I'm not sure. I thought about this, and when I first read it, I thought, what a great idea. And then I thought, This airline lets you check your bag the night before a morning flight. In Chicago, and for some unknown reason, Guam, United is testing service that lets you bring your bag between 6 and 9 p.m. the night before your flight and check it. So now you have to make two trips to the airport. I guess if you were staying in a hotel that adjoined the airport and you could walk your bag over, that might sort of make sense. But I guess might save you a little bit. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Doesn't that seem weird to you to go to the airport the night before?
What city and what airline?
Chicago and Guam are the two airports where United is testing this.
Yeah. Now, you're kind of familiar with the Chicago airports. Are there a lot of hotels that are adjacent?
Yeah, but not adjacent enough that you could walk into the airport.
I see. Okay.
So adjacent as in half a mile away or a mile away. There's a huge convention center in a suburb called Rosemont, which is actually the city that's closest to O'Hare. And so because there's a convention center there, there are a bunch of hotels. And, of course, O'Hare is a big airport, so it has a lot of hotels of its own. But airport hotels where you could walk out the door with your bag, go through a tunnel or something like that and be in the airport, No, not so much. So they're bragging on this, and they said nearly 1,600 bags have been processed through the trial, which started on April the 1st. And I was sitting here doing the math, and I'm thinking, well, if it's been, let's call it 100 days since April the 1st, and you've checked 1,600 bags, that's 16 bags per night. Doesn't seem to be all that overwhelmingly popular to me. One airplane would have 100 suitcases on it easily. So anyways, if you are somewhere near Chicago and you're flying United Airlines and you stepped on the right crack in the sidewalk that day, you might be able to check your bag the night before. Backers of an NBA-ready arena in Las Vegas have secured land to develop a 21,000-seat arena, the project one of 10 sites being considered for an NBA expansion team. They don't have a team yet. Includes a private jet terminal and a dedicated underground tunnel providing secure direct access to the arena for teams and VIPs. So there you go. Las Vegas has an NFL team. We'll soon have the Sacramento Athletics down there. And then they will go after an NBA team, not to mention Formula One racing and stuff like that. You think the folks in tourism in Las Vegas have figured out that this sports thing is a way to get people to town to spend money?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not because they're necessarily a fan of that team or even for that matter a fan of that sport. It's just like one more thing that you can do while you're there, I guess.
One more quick story here before we wrap up the news. A United pilot is suing Marriott after his hotel room was invaded by bats. He was bitten. Of course, bats in many cases carry rabies. So the pilot had to go through a whole series. And these are not, I've never had it happen to me, but everything I've ever read about rabies shots, they are not fun at all. It's not like going in and getting a vaccination or something like that. He discovered the bats, he heard them in the room in the middle of the night. They got the bats out of the room, and he eventually fell asleep. Woke up in the morning, they found a single bat in the room, and he had been bitten on his feet. And so, yeah.
Not funny.
No, really not a good look at all. This is the Sheraton Denver, by the way, is the name of the hotel. I suppose this could have happened any place, so it isn't necessarily condemnation of the hotel, but what a bizarre story. Bats in your hotel room, and that's your travel news for today.
Snakes on the plane. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Want to avoid the coldest seats on the plane next time you fly? Well, keep it here. We'll tell you where. Right here on the Travel Guys. Welcome to the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you. Thanks for coming along. All right. I think this probably a lot of people stayed through the break because everybody would be interested in this. You know, and I am one of those people we talked about a little earlier that when you go to places where you know it's almost consistently cold, you know, yep. whether it's a particular restaurant or whatever, but certainly on a plane, you know, it's been Sacramento, it's sunny, it's hot. You go in on a t-shirt or whatever, and, you know, not long, you're asking, do you guys still hand out those blankets? And they go, no, we don't do that anymore. So, you know, to carry a jacket or whatever. But this is good information to know in regards to seating on the plane. So, Mark, let's talk about it.
I admire, maybe admire is not the word. I am puzzled by people who get on airplanes in nothing but a light T-shirt and gym trunks, male, female, or otherwise, because to me, it's like, you know, you can always take clothing off on the plane. I mean, to an extent. But if you don't have it with you or accessible to you, then putting things on the plane is kind of, so yeah, there's Mark. He's got his jacket and his little lap blanket there, and he's all curled up and ready to go. But and when I read this, I thought to myself, huh, they're right. I mean, I've flown on a few airplanes in my day. And the coldest spot on the airplane, now, during boarding in the wintertime in Chicago, the coldest spot on the plane is the first couple rows of first class, because that door is open for 20 or 30 minutes, wide open. And so whatever the weather is, you're going to know it for that whole time. But in terms of on, when the plane gets into the sky, where do you think would be the coldest seats on the plane? Any, you have any guesses?
Well, let me see. I don't know.
Where are the interior doors on the airplane?
Oh, yeah, the emergency exit place.
Aha! There you go. The emergency exits, because those are doors intended to be opened in case of an emergency. And no matter what you do to try to seal off the outside weather, it has been my experience, having sat in those rows a few times, that there is a... You would know that you were sitting in the emergency exit row. It's not like it's a hurricane or a blizzard, but there is some cool air. And when you get up to 35,000 feet, cool is not the description for the air. It's, you know, tens of degrees below zero, so it's cold.
Yeah, and especially if one of those emergency doors blows out. I mean, then it gets really cold. Oh, that's never happened, though, has it?
No, that never happens. They had a poor Ryanair guy the other day whose window blew out, and somebody, I got into the office, somebody said, wow, somebody got sucked out of an airplane last night. And I'm like, well, that's only partially true. He got partially sucked out of the airplane. His wife held on to him, and eventually they got the guy back into the plane, and they took him to the hospital, and he's going to be okay. But imagine that, you know, here's a guy's wife, you know, and she's kind of holding on to him. And, you know, maybe last night didn't go so well. Maybe the last couple of weeks there's been a little friction. You know, I mean, there you are. You just, oh, I'm so sorry. I let go.
Yeah, it sounds like a scene from a James Bond film or something.
It does almost. Anyway, the seats that are consistently the coldest on the plane are the ones in the exit row. So if you are... You're looking for an extra, you know, you're an extra legroom person. You're willing to pay the extra freight for that. And sometimes it'll get down to where the exit row is the only row left with the extra legroom. They are the roomiest seats on the plane because guess what? They not only have that extra 4 or 5 inches of legroom, they have a few more. So it's really a great place, especially if you put things under your seat. It's a great seat to have on the plane. But if you're susceptible to a little bit of cold, you might want to consider the possibility of taking the aisle seat in the exit row, or at least the middle seat, if you can avoid that. If you can avoid that window, because it's like I said, it's not like it's a hurricane coming in there. It's just enough to know. And if you have that seat, and you're a smarter traveler because you listen to the travel guys, you threw that light blanket in or something. You know, the airlines used to have, they called them blankets. They were kind of thin, actually. They weren't really of much use, but don't be afraid to ask for one. If you're on the plane and you're freezing,
but they don't have them anymore. Were they going to show up with one?
Well, I've occasionally, if I'm lucky enough to get an upgrade, on that would be on United if it happened. It's once in a while you'll get on the plane and there'll be those little flimsy blue blankets.
Okay,
they're kind of like as thick as newspaper.
Pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much. But anyways, if that's your issue, then you can offset that by either avoiding that seat or making sure you bring something with you. Hey, we have just a minute here before the bottom of the hour, I had a news story that I wanted to mention, and it got away from me. The mayor of Venice has proposed a new dynamic pricing fee for tourists in the city.
Boy, that,
yeah, instead of just $10 or $15 to get in, they've been watching these U.S. sports teams, and they said, hey, you know, we can charge more money on busy days. So he's talking about $59 to get into the city. And you know what? I'm thinking my people pay $700-$900 a day to travel internationally by the time you figure the airfare and the hotel and all meals and all that kind of stuff. If you Clayton said last year he was in Venice and it was wall to wall. So if you could pay $59 a day and you're paying thousands of dollars to go to a world class UNESCO World Heritage city like that, why not? Why not pay an extra $60 to eliminate all the people who aren't willing to do that?
There you go.
I don't know how many that is, but.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would buy into that. Like you say, when you're in that deep already, here's the thing. If it actually proves to make it fewer people there, significantly less people there to improve the experience, I'm all for it.
Yep. But you'd have to find that exact number that kept people, because if everybody says, $59, I'll just pay it, then that doesn't solve your problem. It puts some more money in your coffers. Because the other thing that Mayor of Venice is pointing out is that, you know, even people who are just day trippers, you know, they leave behind trash, they need restrooms, things like that. There are things that the people of Venice have to pay for. And so they're trying to offset that. Of course, I would say tourists spend money, and that kind of offsets it, too. Anyways, let's move on.
All right. We are the Travel Guys. Coming up, Clayton Whitehead joins us. He's going to take us to the Baltic States. This is a great interview. Don't miss it. It's next here on the Travel Guys.
Going places with that sports leisure flair. A world of adventure, and we take you there.
The last time you booked a trip with a tour company or a cruise line or anything like that, and you had to go to the airport in order to get to the city where your cruise or your tour departed, how did you get there? Did a friend take you? Did you drive your own car to the airport and leave it for a week or two and come back and pay that big bill? If you'd traveled with Sports Leisure Vacations on one of our extended tours out of town, you would have found that whether you were at the airport or just departing by motor coach, we pick you up at your home and bring you to the point of departure. And guess what happens when you get home? That's all in reverse. We take you from the point, from your arrival point, the airport, or wherever, and take you back home, eliminating all that parking hassle, dragging your suitcase into the airport, all that stuff. So the next time that you travel, especially if you're a mature traveler, think about the possibility Sports Leisure Vacations, the company that takes care of you from the moment you leave until the moment you return.
Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget now, links to our special guests and so much more to make you a smarter traveler can be found at TravelGuysRadio.com. Joining us after his excursion recently to Lithuania is road reporter Clayton Whitehead, who actually listened to the Travel Guys while he was over there. Clayton, welcome home, and let's get to it.
Thanks, Mark and Tom. I actually listened to you two consecutive weeks. So you had a listener in Estonia a few weeks ago, and then 1 weekend from that, Lithuania.
Ah, so now our Lithuania audience this week is down to zero.
Well, that
most likely
is the case. Sorry about that.
So this is one of you have become in recent years more of an international tour director, taking people all to places all over the planet. Europe is kind of a specialty of yours. But this trip was a little bit outside of the box. I mean, you know, there are places you could go in call it regular Europe, that would be off the beaten track. But Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, when I was in school, those were all part of the Soviet Union.
Yes, up until 1991, these were Soviet bloc countries. They've only been 35 years. And among the many amazing things I've experienced there over two visits is just the knowledge that everybody I see who is my age, basically anyone you see who's 40 or over, has a memory of what it was to be a Soviet, you know, to be, whether by choice or by happenstance, by birthright, I guess you might say, they were born into a Soviet bloc country. And these people know the price of freedom, and they know what, and they know the value of freedom, and they know the value of democracy. And I'm not saying anything pro or con. I mean, I wasn't alive in 1776. I don't know what it felt like to fight for freedom. And that's a blessing and a curse, I think, because these folks that we met with, they remembered what they didn't have, and they remembered the fear of the conversion. I'll liken it to our Y2K. Remember when 1999 became 2000, and we were all terrified that the water was going to stop running, and there was going to be no power and no computer, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But the next day dawned whether we wanted it to or not, and it went pretty well. And that's the way these people were, right? Even though they didn't, many of them didn't like being Soviet, even though many of them wanted a different life, you know, there's still this incredible fear of what awaits you on the other side. You're going to wake up tomorrow morning and you're going to be free. But what does that mean? Is there going to be water? Is there going to be milk? Is there going to be food? You know, are the trains still going to be going? Are the planes still going to be flying? And luckily it went very, very well for them. But these people know what it felt like not to be free. And now they know what it feels like to be free. And they're still creating themselves. And they're still joyous about that. And they so want to tell their story, especially to people like us. They want to tell their story to Americans. They want us to know. They want us to know. They want us to remember. They want us to think about the decisions we're making and how they might affect our future.
I want to talk about the people and the places, but I would be negligent at this point if I didn't ask this question. So Russia is their neighbor. Ukraine is their neighbor.
Yes.
Does what you talk about the fact that they've just gotten their arms around being free and what that means. Do they worry about that could be a fleeting moment in their history?
Well, I'll tell you, Putin is universally not liked in the Baltic states. He's mocked. There are giant billboards throughout the three capital cities telling him that he has an appointment in The Hague and he needs to get there. In visiting medieval castles, and you would see the dungeon, and there would be a cardboard cutout of Putin in the cage. They have nothing good to say about Putin. And I think if you are a fan of his, you've learned to keep it to yourself in those three countries. And as for the war in Ukraine, universally, what I heard people saying is that it had nothing to do with Russia wanting a port on the Black Sea. It had nothing to do with geography. It had everything to do with Putin bringing down a democracy. And the support for Ukraine is absolutely universal throughout the three Baltic states. You see Ukrainian flags flying everywhere. And I don't just mean like in people's windows or in yard signs in their front yards, but I mean flying on public buildings. You saw in yellow and blue letters, unity, solidarity, words that showed a very, very clear connection and sympathy that they have for these people. Lots of Ukrainian immigrants in all three states as well. A lot of financial support. Now, these are small countries. Lithuania, the largest. Gosh, I should know this. I think it's 1.5 million people. But all total, the Baltics are small geographically and have rather small populations. But they're offering enormous support in every way possible to the Ukrainians.
Let me just interrupt you for a second here. We're talking with reporter Clayton Whitehead. Clayton is talking about he just returned from the Baltic states here recently. And so if you're thinking, did I accidentally turn into a political program by mistake? No, this is the Travel Guys. And we're just talking about his reactions and some of what life is like in the Baltic states right now. So what do they think of what's going on? Gosh, this is going down a rabbit hole. I'm going to do it anyway. What do they think of what's going on here?
They think that we're making foolish decisions and we aren't remembering what it feels like to be free.
Fascinating, fascinating, Clayton. I was going to ask you, I had it written down here, I was going to ask you to tell me about the people and how they feel about their freedom and all of that, but it didn't take very long for you to cover pretty much all of that. By the way, I just looked it up, 2.8 million people.
So how many people are in the metro Sacramento area? That's fairly, those numbers are fairly close. We're about 2 million, aren't we?
Yeah, just about. Yeah, there you go.
Maybe it's the capital of Vilnius that is about 1.5 million. I spent 3 days there here recently. So
enough about politics.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about the Baltics and how, I mean, you've kind of touched on that, but
the Baltics, well, let me just,
are they like Europe or they like Russia?
Well, let me start by saying how this was birthed. Our listeners have certainly heard us talk about the National Tour Association, the primary trade association for tour operators in North America and who want to do business with North Americans. And it's in that last bit that our association has exploded with lots of European tour operators. Mm-hmm. So right back just before the pandemic, this new company joined. They're based in Vilnius, and they wanted Americans to come. Since I work with the first-timers in our association, that's been my mission for about a quarter century now, I was one of the first people they met. It's a husband and wife, Edvinas and Agna, and we just struck up a real friendship with each other. And then after a year of meeting, Agna invited me to come see her. And I was like, don't say it if you don't mean it, because I will come. So that trip was 2 years ago. It was in the summer of 24.
Right.
And I flew into Tallinn, which is the capital of Estonia, 500-600 kilometers north of Vilnius, where they live. And
give us some other marker. How far from Frankfurt, or is that where you connected plane wise?
Yes, but I couldn't say. I'd have to look it up.
Okay, but it's north of Germany.
Yeah, yeah. 500 kilometers is like 400 miles.
Okay.
Anyway, so it was a good haul, and Edvinas was there in their family station wagon and picked me up, and we spent a week just rambling all over Lithuania, Estonia, and Latvia. It was kind of a vacation. It was kind of a familiarization tour. It was absolutely a week in a car with two guys talking.
Or as we say here at Sports Leisure Vacations, a scouting trip.
It was a scouting trip.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more than that, because in spending a week with this guy who's in his mid to late 40s, he was a teenager when in 1991, when they became free states, he just had this incredible story to tell. And I was just blown away. And by the end of the trip, I thought, not only have I had a great week and a half, not only do I like this place, but I think I can sell this place. I wanted others to see their passion for life. I think Americans could benefit from that.
So how did that work with people? You had, what, 20, 21 people, something like
that? I had 25 people on my tour, and I think everybody had an extraordinary time. We mirrored a lot of my steps. We flew into Tallinn. We flew home from Vilnius. We visited Riga in between. That's the capital of Latvia. We did lots of small towns. We did lots of fairy tale castles, walled cities, cobblestone streets. The Baltic states are extraordinarily romantic. Now, I've been all over Europe. And then there's the joke about ABC tours, another bloody castle or another bloody cathedral. I mean, that's part of the European experience. But in this fairy tale part of the world, there weren't any cathedrals, really. This area was largely pagan and or Lutheran. And if you know the Lutheran Church, God bless them, they do everything on the down low. So they were not these great cathedral builders like the Catholics. They have a very different architectural tradition. But what the county or what these countries may have lacked in cathedrals, they definitely made up for in castles. There are castles everywhere, big castles, little castles, manor houses. And there's just this fairy tale quality about it. There was something very magical about about the castles. And then the food is amazing. They eat everything. Basically, if they can catch it, they'll eat it. We had meals that featured boar, elk, venison on more than one occasion, duck on more than one occasion, chicken and pork. They're not big beef eaters. And a really great thing about them, and this is something that people often lament when they're traveling in Europe, the Baltic people eat vegetables, and I mean they eat lots of vegetables. They like salads, just like Californians. It's incredible. And lots of fresh fruit and lots of wonderful vegetables, especially root vegetables. We had parsnips one day, which are one of my favorites. That was really awesome. We had cold beet soup. We had hot beet soup. We had beet salads. They eat a lot of root vegetables. Of course, they keep well through their long winters. They are Northern Europe. Really, they are less similar to their eastern neighbor, Russia, and they are less similar to their western and southern neighbors like Czech and Hungary and Poland. They are more similar to their northern neighbors, Finland, Sweden, and Norway. And indeed, they consider themselves Northern Europe, not Eastern Europe. And that's a very significant designation. I've enjoyed my travels in Poland and Hungary. But those countries are a little bit crusty. They're a little bit, I don't mean to sound disrespectful. Again, I've loved my travels there, but those countries are still recovering from World War II. And in many ways, they're still caught up in that story of the Jews and the concentration camps and the terrible atrocities of World War II. And those are great stories. Those are stories that need to be told. But it's a lot when every single day that's the narrative.
But this is a very different story.
It's a very different story in the Baltic states. Everything seems fresh and new and alive and just this incredible sense of pride and desire to share the story with the visitor.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Our special guest today is Clayton Whitehead, road reporter for Sports Leisure. We're talking about his recent trip to Lithuania. We talked about food and a lot of political stuff. I'd like to just briefly touch on your accommodations and where you stayed and the overall reaction of your travelers. I know you have a lot of passion for this, Clayton, but you had people that had maybe been there for the first time. What was their reactions?
Everybody seemed to really enjoy every aspect of the trip. I guess if there was anything that people grumbled just a little about, it was a lot of walking daily. And then I realized very quickly that the difference between me and my buddy going across these countries in his station wagon is that we could drive into the city center. Motor coaches, no driving into city centers.
Because no room for them.
Yeah, they can't maneuver on the small city streets. So there was a lot of walking into and out of the places we were visiting. And very often those walks were on cobblestones or other very irregular surfaces. God bless them. I had a couple people who had canes and who had some mobility issues, but they did their best. And I think we all came away with a really, really grand experience. Our hotel accommodations were really, really nice. I will confess that on my personal trip, Edvinas and I stayed in a lot of small inns and motor courts, things that were convenient for the traveler who was moving through quickly and who was in a station wagon. On this particular trip, I decided to make one nod towards American expectations, and I stayed in mostly larger hotels with American brands. We stayed in two Radisson Blues. We stayed in a Marriott. And that not only gave people kind of a name they were familiar with and some of the comforts of home, but also room configurations that are comfortable and expected by American travelers, i.e. a room with a king bed or a room with two double or queen beds, and then having all the amenities that you would expect on the lobby level, like a full service restaurant and a bar.
Right, right. Well, it sounds like that. I can just tell from your energy and your enthusiasm that this was an amazing experience. We're just about out of time. a takeaway? Something, I mean, you've shared some of those things already, but was there something that made a real impression on you, an attraction or a city or an experience?
Yes. My favorite restaurant is called the Old Hasna, and it's in the city center in the old square of Tallinn, the capital of Estonia. And it's located in a building that dates back to the 1400s, and they provide a medieval experience from the moment you walk in until the moment you walk out, not only in terms of menu, but in terms of the attire worn by the staff, in terms of the crockery that they serve the dishes on, in terms of there being a little medieval band that drifted from dining room to dining room, playing the lute and a little flute of some sort.
So not a hokey tourist makeover, but a real shot at authenticity.
That's exactly it. The pride that the staff had in what they were doing and the way they were doing it was absolutely extraordinary. Absolutely on par with the living history interpreters at Colonial Williamsburg. You could not get them out of character. They were living the early 1500s. And we not only experienced it in that restaurant, but at some other stops along the way, maybe in a castle or maybe at another dining function or in a distillery where they were making a herbal potion. Definitely alcoholic, definitely strong. And the recipe dated back to the 1400s, but it wasn't hokey. They weren't doing it in a funny way. They were doing it like, this is my history, and I'm fully invested in it, and I want you to be as well.
Wow.
And that was exciting.
Sounds like a place where Clayton has been talking about the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, that he just visited with a group here recently. You make me want to go.
Well, I'm planning my next trip already. I'm thinking it might be a good golden anniversary trip for the year 1929. Yeah, baby. No, 2029.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing a few of your thoughts. We are the Travel Guys. We have just a few thoughts to wrap up the program, and we'll be back right after this.
Mark and Tom, Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Don't forget, check us out at sportsleisure.com. No, wait, travelguysradio.com. That other place
That's
is
right.
a good place to go, too, though. Travelguysradio.com. Mark, your turn. I'm done.
My broadcasting partner is losing his mind, but that's all right. So our World Cup friends, who latched on to ranch dressing, as we've talked about here on the Travel Guys the last couple of weeks, trying to figure out ways to get it through TSA or get it when they get home. Guess what the other thing that our friends from around the planet have decided is really unique here in the United States during World Cup? Large Walmart stores.
Really?
They're like, we have never seen anything like this before. Well, you know, think about it. The footprint of a typical Walmart store, I mean, the one down the street from me here in Rancho Cordova is not the biggest Walmart ever, but it's pretty good size by the time you count the parking lot and, you know, the loading docks in the back. It's got a pretty big footprint. So our European friends are, because in Europe, space is at a premium. So you don't have these massive stores and these huge parking lots and stuff because a lot of people, they walk or they bicycle or they take transit to someplace like Walmart, probably go more often and take less stuff home. So anyways, the Europeans are and other folks from around the planet are amazed at the fact that we have such large Walmart stores. Another quickie here before we wrap it up for the day. We mentioned that Dolly Parton has popped up twice in travel news this week. Dolly is starting a chain of oversized, you know, these big gas stations that have places to eat and places for truck drivers to shower, all that stuff.
Buc-ee's.
So Dolly has opened the first of her big service stations in the in Tennessee. In the greater Nashville area, 75,000 square feet, which is roughly half the size of an average Walmart.
Wow.
So, yeah, wow. And the other news about Dolly Parton here, which is really cool, starting in December on Broadway will be the original musical, Dolly. it's going to be the Dolly Parton story. Now, we were talking about this around the office today, and think about it. Who is more loved, more recognized, more universally highly thought of than Dolly Parton? We couldn't think of anybody.
No.
She's also had an incredibly interesting life. So, Dolly, a new musical coming to Broadway in December. I hope it's spectacular because I'm planning on making a lot of money on that show. I will be early in line for tickets. I love Dolly Parton.
Me too. She's a great entertainer and a fabulous individual. Final word, Mr. Mark.
Final word, dance like nobody's watching, and we'll see you next Saturday morning at 11 o'clock.